I mean, Blade did a lot of running in that movie. I don't know why you bring it up.
Tyrell was Hannibal King's brother in Blade. Yeah.
Right. All right. Welcome. Oh, wait.
You blew it already. Jesus.
I blew it already. I'm thinking about Blade. Welcome to this episode of Feel the Burn, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle, joined by my lovely co-host, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Quite well. How are you?
I'm all right. Getting ready for some Lopez talk, like always. Ready to start the show how we always do with our... we do it every week, so you won't be surprised by our weekly George Lopez trivia question. You ready?
I'm ready for it.
All right. So what Christmas present does Vic get Max in Meet the Cuban Parents? Is it A, a monkey, B, a motorbike, C, a BMX bike, or D, nothing?
I'm going to go with C.
Motherfucker, I got that wrong. You got it right. BMX bike is correct. I took this quiz before we started. I got it fucking wrong.
I'm just a bigger Lopez lover than you.
I know. You're going to have to be the host. Why am I fucking introing this? But, I mean, that's some good news because I have some bad news for us, Tim.
We ran out of time again.
Yeah. I mean, we're for people who do a George Lopez show, we're terrible at this. We're actually not going to have time to talk about the episode where Benny feels sick, so George takes her to the hospital, and she finds out she has the clap, and she got it from Randy, who got it from his last girlfriend. While at the doctor, and they're listing off past checkups, George finds out he has a sister that his mom gave away at birth. That takes quite a turn. She gets the clap, and then he finds out his sister. But we don't have time to talk about that episode. We have a really good episode. We're going to be talking to the creators of the new Kickstarter, Beef Boys, Aubrey Sitterson, and Tyrell Cannon. How are you guys doing?
Good, man. And I hate to start off on this note, but it's Beef Bros.
Beef Bros.
Beef Bros.
Oh, fuck. And it was because, too, and I was going to bring this up, I've been, like, reading it and thinking about it all day, and every time I say Beef Bros, I want to say it in that – what was the show Jesse and Joey had? Oh, Rush Hour Renegades.
Oh, yeah.
So I always want Beef Bros coming at
you, bro. You haven't seen the video yet because we're doing this early and the video's not finished. But I've seen Tyrell's seen an early cut of it too, and it is full of the Jesse and the Renegades voice. You're gonna flip.
I'm excited. Yeah. It's like the perfect, literally every time I'm like, all right, getting ready for Beef Bros coming at you.
Beef Bros. Can we just do an hour of us doing the voice?
Yeah, I want to get like one of those systems where I can just like pipe in like boobies.
Oh, like a soundboard? Dude, I used
soundboard,
to do,
yeah.
I used to sometimes go on a podcast that had a soundboard and they would try and have, and they had like, they were like one of these podcasts that had like three or four hosts. And so they like one of them would try and have a serious conversation, and then the other one would just soundboard just maniacally throughout. It was the worst. It was the absolute. I don't know. Can I swear?
Oh yeah.
It was the drizzling
yeah.
shits. How about that?
That's 100% why I haven't we not pursued it because it would just turn into like fart noises. I was on one for numerous years, and I would just pull up like. Because they wouldn't let me do it because I would sit there and do it all the time. So I would just pull up fart noises on my phone, and it would come to me and be like, what'd you think of that book this week? And it was just like, oh, let me pull this fart noise here. So, yeah, you don't want to be that guy. But, I mean, title – well, I guess we'll start with that. Like, how – Beef Bros is maybe one of the best titles for a comic. How did you – how did that come about?
Well,
like,
obviously, it's a Dostoevsky reference. No, man. it's exactly what this man. I spent a lot of time thinking, like, even for something as goofy sounding as Beef Bros. I spent a lot of time thinking about titling, and I think that you know different titles have different goals, right? And there's a lot of different theories and thought processes you can go about when you're figuring out what to call something. But for this, you know, we're doing a Kickstarter, and it needs to be something that people hear and immediately understand, if not the entirety of it, at least the vibe, right, and the feel of what this thing is. And, man, despite some people, I won't name any names, inability to remember what it is. I think that I think Beef Bros immediately brings up an image, you know, in most people, and that, you know, that's the most important thing, that people hear Beef Bros and they get an idea for the the vibe that they're that's coming at them.
Well, and I mean, I think that's honest. Like, you look at books like, you know, Beef Bros, or I think even was thinking of it today, Shirtless Bear Fighter. Like,
yeah,
stupid fucking name, but it, like, it sells the book. It's hilarious, and like, it sets a tone for the book. And like, there's so much like actual thought that goes into naming a book like that versus I don't want to say there isn't like something like, you know, Injection, or I don't know, American Vampire. Like, obviously those, like, there's a lot,
Beef,
but like
Injection. That was our our runner up title.
But if you want, like, if you want to bring someone in, and you obviously want to like establish the tone for them to come in and like enjoy it off the bat, like kind of know what they're getting into. Like, there's a lot of thought, and I mean, with the preview you guys kind of have for it, like, it's clear the issue kind of establishes itself on the name of them being Beef Bros. Like, it's brought up numerous times.
Yeah, it seems like the more we repeat it, the better. I think that it's kind of that thing. It's like when you say it that many times, it's like a, I don't know, it's almost like this mantra for the over-the-topness that is the book. So I like that it does get mentioned. I mean, in a preview, I think we showed you probably, what, 5 or 6 pages. I don't know how many times they say Beef Bros in it. A lot.
Quite a few, yeah.
I think Aubrey just copy and paste most of the time.
Well, listen, man, I subscribe to the head-on, apply directly to the forehead school of advertising, right? Which is, if you're not familiar, were those nationwide? I heard Tim cackling, so I figure they must have been. Did everybody get those advertisements where they live?
I definitely got it.
Which ones?
Back in New England.
Yeah, maybe it's a Northeast thing, because I got it when I was living in New York. Head on, apply directly to the forehead. Head on, apply directly to the forehead. It's like this bullshit, nonsense, snake oil thing that you're supposed to just rub on your head, and it's like, it's homeopathic medicine, so it's utter nonsense. They can't make any kind of claims that it does anything, but they had these cheap-ass commercials, and they just had people rubbing it on their forehead and saying over and over again, head on, apply directly to the forehead, head on, apply directly to the forehead. And, like, everybody made fun of it, but everybody also knew about it, and it's also, like, there have been studies, like, that's the only advertising technique that actually works. Like, everything else, who knows, right? Like, maybe it'll become, like, you know, maybe it's the Geico Gecko and people really like it, or it's Flo or whatever. I only know insurance company advertisements. But like, in terms of actual efficacy, the only thing that works is just saying it over and over again. So, yeah, man, Beef Bros. Beef Bros, Beef Bros, Beef Bros, apply directly to the forehead.
So while we're talking about beef, what's everyone's favorite kind of beef?
I like grass-fed. Nice grass-fed burger would be up there for me.
Man, I haven't had meat in, outside of, I eat fish, so I'm pescatarian. I haven't had meat in years and years and years. But I, one of the few things I'll still get a craving for is like a rare prime rib. Mm-hmm. Yeah, real beefy.
Yes, I don't think I've had meat in like 2 years. I mean, I eat the fake meat, but
yeah.
turkey, man.
Oof. Yeah, it's been a long time for me.
Dry ass. Yes.
I'm asking a bunch of fucking too, like, man, vegetarians or pescatarians. Like, what's your favorite kind of animal to eat?
I kind of like that. That's good. I'm glad you asked that question, because mine was pretty easy. Everyone else had to explain their whole dietary plan for their life, which is cool.
Yeah. I just like eating things that taste like. I mean, that's always, like, the fucking weirdest to me. And, I don't necessarily know if I don't know why I don't eat. I just stopped. But, like, I like eating the chicken patties, like, the fake ones, the chicken patties.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah,
like, it's still, like, okay, I don't want to eat meat, but I want to, like, eat something that is tricking myself into thinking I'm consuming. I still want to feel like I'm fucking killing a chicken. I still don't actually want to, like, kill a chicken.
But you gotta watch that cholesterol.
That's, like, the craziest talking point to me from, like, people who are, like, enthusiastic meat eaters. Is like they think they've got, like, they've checkmated me. Like, oh, you say you don't eat meat, but you're eating this Beyond Burger. It's like, well, yeah, man, meat's delicious. Right? Like that's the, I didn't stop eating it because I don't think it's delicious. It's objectively wonderful and delectable to eat.
Well, it's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure heroin makes you feel good. I'm not saying it doesn't.
Yeah, meat is basically like heroin. That's what we're all saying right now. That's something we've all come to an agreement on.
Yeah, this is actually an intervention for you, Tyrell.
Good luck. I'm a farm boy, all right? So
this, I mean, so we, I mean, Tyrell's been on recently for Eris, which I've got. It's beautiful in person. So excited. How did you guys team up kind of on this project? Because I know, Tyrell, like, a lot of your stuff has kind of been the self-published, like, your own or with mm-hmm. Logan. Like, I mean, how did this come about between you guys?
Do you remember?
I remember getting connected on Twitter, and then you wrote me an email with a all caps Beef Bros, and then you said, hey, you want to work on this thing together? And I was like, yeah, cool.
This is going to be a great email.
Dude, but I think awkward. Our meet
yeah,
cute.
I think it was somehow, yeah, we got somehow connected by somebody, maybe?
It was Grim. It was Grim Wilkins.
Oh, Grim. Yeah,
man.
Grim's
just
great.
Like, oh, apropos, so good. Apropos of nothing. Like, yeah, he's a guy that both, I don't know him in real life. Do you know him in real life, Tyrell?
Yeah, I've met him a few times. I met him at one of the very first comic conventions I ever went to, which was Alternative Press Expo in San Fran. And he was tabling with a few other people, and I became friends with actually all those guys. And yeah, Grim's a good dude.
He's, and Miranda's gorgeous.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's, Miranda's bonkers. It's so smart. It's, I don't know. It's a book that everybody should be talking about. Yeah, man, I knew Grim from online, and Grim one day just kind of like out of nowhere was like, oh, you know who should work on a book together? He like posted this publicly. You know who should work on a book together? It's Aubrey and Tyrell. And I said, all right. Well, I mean, if Grim says so, man. And so I reached out to Tyrell, and I think we'd been talking for a minute before I sent the all caps Beef Bros, but maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably some Twitter DMs.
There might have been a little bit of foreplay beforehand.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, you just talking about, you were telling me things you liked about my work. I was looking at your work and, you know, checking out No One Left to Fight and all that. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then I think at some point we're like, let's just start an email because I hate Twitter Messenger.
Yeah, it's the worst. But yeah, like at the time, like you had just done the Doom
thing. Yeah, my Doom book had just come out. And that was definitely something that I think, yeah, was a touch point.
For sure, man.
I don't know. You obviously, I think, saw it, right?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, you.
Of course, yay. You obviously. I love it. I don't know. There's other dudes here. It's not just me.
I think you guys saw it, too. I did a little Doom fan comic. Actually, a year ago today, the Inktober from last year was all a Doom comic that I did. So.
Yeah, man. I had seen your big, beefy dudes. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, Beef Bros is like an idea that I've been kicking around for a minute. That started from a place of, I really love, like, side-scrolling beat-em-ups, right? Like Streets of Rage and Final Fight mm-hmm. and Double mm-hmm. Dragon and all of that stuff. But the weird, you know, it's not a weird thing because those things are very much like a product of kind of 80s crime panic, right? Like all those things are about, like, there are these like savage fucking criminals that have taken over the city. You know, they've stolen the mayor's daughter. They're overrunning like decent society, and we just gotta get out there. We gotta beat the shit out of these criminals, right? And like that's such like a it's very much like a Dirty Harry, Death Wish kind of like hateful reactionary kind of thing. And so like it started from a place of like trying to think about like, well, how do we do the good version of that? Like, how do we do the fun version of, you know, a couple dudes just brawling in the streets. And it came from a place too of, you know, my kind of drift leftward politically, and looking around at, you know, and I adore superhero comics, right? I love them. But you know, while superhero comics started off very much as kind of this like populist sentiment, right? It's Superman beating up criminals who are like criminals, sure, but they're like criminals who are exploiting regular people, right? He's beating there's even like old examples of Superman like beating up like landlords and stuff like that. You know, that's how it started, but then as kind of American society sort of shifted and changed post-war, and especially with like the Red Scare and McCarthyism kind of changed how everybody sort of framed everything that they were doing, right? Superheroes kind of, along with American culture, made this kind of tact rightward, and they became kind of this tool of strictly, you know, like centrist law and order, or maybe even like reactionary type politics. And man, I hate that. I hate that superheroes, which should be, you know, in my mind, superheroes should be the best of us, right? It should be a beacon to aspire to. Superheroes should be aspirational. And yet when I look around at superheroes, most of the time, they're just super cops, right? They're just policemen in fancy clothing going out and beating the shit out of criminals, as opposed to actually finding ways to help people. And that was really the genesis for it. And I knew that Tyrell, because of conversations we had had, that he would get that approach. And also Tyrell draws really great muscly dudes, which was another really important component of this project. So yeah, man, it was just kind of a match made in heaven.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, kind of the trajectory of where that's taken. I mean, especially like the 80s, like Reaganomics, where, I mean, that all kind of, again, drifted to like, and you touch on this a lot in this, like we've seen in the previews, like blaming the poor, blaming the criminals. And then superheroes kind of became reactionary to that. And then even, I think the closest we've come back is like, you know, Bush era, where they push back maybe like against the government, or like you saw like them tackle war, but like it never came back to like, again, kind of on the streets. And again, it's crazy. Like you have someone like Spider-Man who like lives on the streets and never really takes up street issues with that. Like it's always,
well, even during, I mean, again, it's a level era. Of, you mentioned the Bush era, but man, like what I remember from the Bush era was a renewed interest in having superheroes kick the shit out of terrorists. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, or like
the Ultimates and all
Doctor Doom crying on a pile of shit. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was gonna. I didn't want to bring up Aubrey's views on 9/11 because.
Thank you.
We all know where that goes. But I was gonna ask how you feel about Doctor Doom crying at Ground Zero.
I think it's silly. I think it's silly and exploitive.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing is that. When superhero comics of the last maybe 15 years, and again, we're making generalizations here, but I would say in general, some of the ones from the big two, when they decide to do something that is supposed to feel like it connects with the average person or people that aren't, you know, pro, you know, everything that the government does or people that have a different idea, the way they do it in these sort of pandering ways that don't feel sincere. And they don't have any sort of lasting effect on any of these characters. And so it's kind of like them having Dr. Doom there is the same thing kind of as like maybe Pepsi would put out like a Twin Towers can or something, you know,
right.
Like it doesn't feel sincere to me. And I think that if anything, you know, I'm probably less adept at political conversations in terms that most people use. But one of the things that I connected with when Aubrey and I started talking was more this idea that superheroes can work with people at their level and make real change. And that, to me, that's the kind of thing that I would like to see as a reader. And I think a lot of people that you know, read superhero comics want to feel maybe a slight more of a personal connection to it. And I think that's missing in a lot of things. And the other thing is just the idea that people can stand up for themselves and people can try to help each other. Like, those were the things that connected for me. Because, you know, Aubrey brought up Streets of Rage, and I'm a huge fan of those kind of games. But then we also talked a lot about Bill and Ted and how, you know, they, like, created this perfect world by just being excellent to each other. And I think that's really the core of what got me interested in the book.
Yeah. Terrell's right. You know, like, one of the guiding lights for us in doing Beef Bros and kind of how we've positioned it and worked, you know, wrote out this first issue and designed the characters has been you know, creating something that is truly aspirational, right? It's these guys, like, they're not, they don't have complicated theories, right? They're not lecturing people. It's not meant to be, it's, it is, make no mistake about it, this is a leftist book, right? But it's not a college professor quoting Marxism at you, right? It's meant to be a much more accessible view of a better world, right? Where it's, it really is, it's these two grinning, muscly himbos just doing what they think is right, which is really simple. And it's all based on stuff that, I mean, hopefully anybody would agree with, you know, like this idea that if you can help somebody, you help them and you do right by people and you're kind to one another. And if, you know, somebody needs a hand, you give it to them. And everything else just kind of flows out of that. And that was very much kind of the guiding light of doing the project too, is that it should have their simplistic characters, and so they've got simplistic ideas and ideals, but that's not a weakness, it's a strength, because it's something that anybody can wrap their head around. And so, you know, while it is an explicitly leftist comic in terms of the politics being espoused, it's not really a political comic. You know, at the end of the day, it is these if you look at the preview, that's what the comic is. It's two big beefy guys fighting and brawling and smiling and having a good time and helping people out. It's not meant to be a divisive political thing, you know? And the hope is that, you know, maybe by reading this thing and checking it out, people can say, oh, well, this is, you know, this isn't like the crazy unhinged socialism or communism or leftism that I've heard about on the news or seen people talking about on Twitter. This is really an empowering view of how people should be treating one another, you know, and the type of society that you could build. I don't know. I feel like I'm just ranting at this point.
No,
which happens.
Well, and I think
it's a risk of having me on your podcast.
And I think there's something to, like, the unbridled positivity of, like, the whole reason, like, however many years ago I started doing this specifically with Pages Panels was, like, I was working on a weekly review cast, like, and we were reading so many books, and so many times I was just reading books that I just personally didn't like, which was fine, but, like, so it was, I don't want to shit on books because people put so much work into them, but at the same time, it's like, so, like, it just turns into, like, you know, turning a phrase of, like, you know, this book isn't for me, this is, like, what it is, yeah, like, yeah, yeah, and, like, I was like, I'd just rather spend my time talking about books I love. So it was just specifically building around episodes, like, with creators that I was, like, impressed with, and all the amount of work that went into it, and talking positively, like, as much as I can about a book. And, like, that's, I, like, you get out of just, like, the few pages you read, this is just, like, the, like, unbridled, like, enthusiasm these, like, bros have for, like, just, like, fucking helping people. And, like, that's, like you said, it's not like beat your head over with, like, leftist views. It's, like, literally, like, hey, man, like, you need a place to live? There's all these other places. Or, hey, come, like, chill with us. Like, and, like, that is, like, the legit of it. It's just, like, people being good. And, like, that feels good to read. It, like, and then you are able to tie it with amazing art and, like, humor as well, which, like, it just, like, feels good to read it, which, like, I think people want from comic books. That's, like, me and Tim are usually, like, either talking about horror books or books along these lines where, like, they're just, like, like, zaniness to the max, where you're just having fun. And, like, I would much rather, like, do that than oftentimes, like, read, like, I mean, I like, you know, I'm a big Morrison stan, but, like, sometimes I just rather sit down and read, like, Prison Pit, like, in a sitting, mm-hmm. and just, like, have a fucking great time.
Yeah, man. You know, I, like, probably everybody here, I spend, you know, my fair share of time online and looking at social media and things like that, and it's real easy to get, especially from a leftist point of view, from a leftist political point of view, it's real easy to get dismayed and panicked and freaking out. And, you know, I think that, you know, I enjoy like the kind of like snarky dirtbag leftist stuff as much as anybody, probably more than most people. I find it cathartic, and I and I sympathize with the views, and it's, you know, it gets a laugh out of me. But, you know, increasingly, in the present political environment, you know, it's been driven home to me, certainly, and hopefully to other people, that, you know, there's not going to be anybody that comes and saves us, right? I think a lot of people like look to Bernie, or, you know, choose their favorite politician, you know, it's, whether it's AOC or Ilhan Omar, or, you know, any Rashida Tlaib. I always butcher her last name. That's why I was trying not to say her. Rashida, good old Rashida. You know, people look for a savior, and they hope that, you know, electoral politics and kind of just the system is going to step in and help them out. And what we've seen increasingly is that that's not the case, right? Is that what's making changes in people's lives and what is helping people and really affecting the type of change that we want to see are grassroots and community-based initiatives, right? It's people working to help each other, right, and working to solve the problems in their communities. And that's really, you know, that's how the Beef Bros look at things, right? And that's kind of the energy we've tried to cultivate with the book, which is not one of like snarky, angry, tear it all down pessimism, but of kind of dewy-eyed optimism that, listen, man, all we need to do is just work together and be nice to each other, and that's where you start, right? And then everything else can build out of that. And, you know, that's very much the idea of Beef Bros, and how the first issue is structured too, is it starts from a place of like, hey, look, this guy doesn't have anywhere to live, he's getting beat up by cops, let's solve that problem, let's give him a place to live and take it from there. And everything that, and every choice that the Beef Bros make, that Huey and Ajax make over the course of this first issue, is based on really simple stuff, which is what's going to be helpful, right? What's the right thing to do here? And it's, you know, it's meant to be inspiring and aspirational, you know?
I think when, like, again, we kind of talked about, like, how you guys came together on this, but, like, when I think of a book between you two, like, this is literally, like, at least look and tone. I mean, because I think coming off No One Left to Fight, and then having just read Eris, like, this is, like, a perfect combination of kind of what you both do extremely well. And I think a lot of that is kind of in terms of the style and look of the book. Was it a pretty clear thing early on for you guys coming together, like knowing that work? I mean, I love the aspect of kind of the arrows flying everywhere. Like, it is very bombastic in its approach. Is that something you guys kind of early on were able to establish, like, what was going to work tone wise? Because again, I think it's like looking at No One Left to Fight and kind of the look and color palette of that, and then coming into what Tyrell does amazingly with setting and action. Like, I think this is like a perfect marriage of you two.
Thanks, man. I agree. I do have a shout out to our colorist, and Aubrey, so you say his name because I don't know how to
Fico Osseo, my co-creator on No One Left to Fight, actually does the colors on Beef Bros,
right? And he did an amazing job on these colors and turned around for us really quick, and it's really awesome to have him because I think he gets it. I think for us though, like, to address the question is, like, you know, Aubrey and I had a really long conversation about a lot of the things that we connect to, which I think is really important when you're collaborating, so that you find the touch points. And then kind of from that point, we were able, you know, as far as like when I was developing the visuals, we kind of would send each other texts or Pinterest boards or things like that. And it was sort of a thing where too, I think, you know, it's good to take a minute and try to appreciate. We took a minute to appreciate what the other person does and wants to do. So I think one of the things that Aubrey asked me the first time we talked was like, well, what do I want to do? Like, what do I want to draw? And that's always the best question for an artist, because if there's a way that the writer can put things in there that you want to draw, it just makes everything a lot more fun. Because the artist spends a lot of time looking at these things, you know? And Aubrey and I had all these great touch points of, you know, pro wrestling and anime. We talked a lot about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. We talked about the Barbarian Brothers. We talked about, you know, different pro wrestlers we like. We talked about Streets of Rage. And, you know, that was starting to get me a sense of what he was going for. And I think, you know, the first couple sketches I turned in were probably toned down a bit. And I think Aubrey really pushed me to just crank it up to 11, just like push everything as far as it can go. And so once I figured out that that's what he was looking for, I was able to kind of race off with the visuals. And then I'm not sure writing wise, Aubrey, like how you sort of processed what we talked about.
Dude, it's funny, you know, we had a phone call like when I was starting to break. So I've, you know, the full first issue is written already. And before I sat down and wrote the whole thing, I'd been kind of trying to plot things out and figure out, you know, like, just kind of generally get a feel for like what the story of this first issue was going to be. And I called Tyrell and we talked a little bit about it. And I, explained to him kind of what I was thinking. And I don't remember like Tyrell is much nicer than I am. And, he has a much more subtle hand. So he didn't like Tyrell didn't outright tell me that that was a bad idea. But he helped me see that it was, and really encouraged me, you know, cause this is my first Kickstarter, and Tyrell's done a bunch. And you know, there's a lot of obvious differences between doing a Kickstarter and doing a book at a publisher, right? But one of the biggest ones is that I don't have to get approval from anybody on this, which is new to me, right? And, you know, I'm very much used to when I'm pitching stuff to people, having to frame it in such a way that it's kind of palatable to the comic book industry at large's view of how a story should be structured, if that makes sense, you know? And like the most reductive example of this is that like Robert McKee three act structure, everything is like a audition for a FX pilot, you know? That's like the really bad version of this. But even places that don't have that, you know, they understandably, because they're putting their money up and they're committing to publishing and distributing this thing, they really want to have an idea of kind of like what this overarching story is. And so it helps to be able to frame it in language and structures that they're used to, especially if you're a writer. If you're a full cartoonist and you can come in and just do some pages and be like, look, this is what it's going to be, then people can wrap their brains around it. But if you're sending over pitch documents, there are expectations in terms of structure and approach. And Tyrell kind of helped me realize that, man, we're doing a Kickstarter. We don't have any of that. We don't have to adhere to anybody else's idea of how this thing should be broken down and structured. And so it really freed me to pace and organize the story of this first issue in a way that I don't think would fly either internally at a traditional comic book publisher or even on the racks in a comic book shop. I just don't think it would click with that audience. And I think that's perfect, because that's not the audience we're going for through a Kickstarter, right? We're going for this broader kind of outside, you know. And of course, we want everybody to read this thing. And I think that there's a lot to love for fans of superhero comics and fans of, you know, outrageous shonen manga, like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure and stuff like that. But, you know, our goal isn't necessarily finding a spot for it on the racks in comic book shops. So it really kind of freed me to structure this thing in a way that it became the comic that I really wanted to read. And I think the thing that really nailed it home for me was Tyrell say, constant escalation. It's like Die Hard. Just every single page is just more and more and more, and it ramps up continually. And that's really the structure I went for, and it's a structure that I don't think that the direct market would be. I don't think it would be, the direct market is as conducive to that kind of structure as hopefully Kickstarter will be for us. That's the plan, at least.
Well, even for me, like, regardless of whether it works or not, I mean, I hope it does, but, like, I am bored with those things. Like, I'm bored with that kind of, you know, catering to the broadest audience, I think makes the worst work that will last the least amount of time. And I think when you're when you're sort of revving your engines and you're really pushing yourself as a creator to do something that challenges you and maybe doesn't fit into a box, you tend to, you know, have a better chance of making that transcendent piece, you know, whereas if you're just trying to do safe things, you're never going to achieve that. Of course, you're not going to fail as hard,
right?
But you're never going to succeed as big.
Right. And I think it breeds, I think either subconsciously or if you know, you take the time, like it reads as a reader like someone is generally enjoying what they're creating. And I think that comes across in Bifro's, like, and I mean, to your point, I think there is a specific page in the preview where you get the first shot of them and they're introducing themselves. And like you said, like, it's a JoJo, they're posing, like, they're there. But I loved what sold me on it was Nugget, like, saying they're the Beef Bros, what are they wearing? So first, he's aware of, like, who they are, like, but, like, he's questioning, like, what the fuck are they wearing? Like, in context of humor, like, that's the type of humor that sells me, but also, like, again, it is, like, in terms of plot and story, like, I don't understand, like, he knows who they are, why doesn't he know what they look like? It's just, like, referential and, like, zany, and, like, again, that's something that comes across in not only creator-owned, but again, specifically, I think, in Kickstarter, where there's people generally pushing something as a passion project. And I think as a reader, or at least when I read something, I can tell, or I hope I can tell, that I can read something and it seems like people are generally enjoying making it. And to me, like, that's just as pleasing as, again, reading, like, even some of the better stuff at the Big Two, because, again, like, a lot of that times that's, you know, that's work. That's a project that something's putting into it, but like, this is like two people generally just making a book they love, and like, I don't know, that's just great.
That's really good for me, and I was pumping my fist in the air the whole time you were saying that, because man, that makes my day hearing that. And I've been, you know, we're recording this early, but I've been sending the sample around to some, like, fellow pros and other podcasters and journos and stuff like that, and the thing everybody comes back with is, oh my god, this is the perfect thing for you and Tyrell. And that really excites me, because I feel the same way, man. It's, you know, as I mentioned before, this is my first Kickstarter. I've never done one before, and a big part of that is fear, because it's it not only does it seem like a lot of work, it is a lot of work, right, as I'm finding out. But and the fact that it is, I didn't want to try and do a Kickstarter for a thing unless it was something like Beef Bros that is, people can instantly grok and they can instantly wrap their brains around what this thing is. And it, you know, it needs to speak to people on kind of a primal level, and it also needs to be a showcase for the people working on it. And so, yeah, man, that's very much what I think we both kind of aim for, was like, this should be everything, not only everything that we do well, but everything we want to see from comics crammed into this 32-page thing. And, you know, the fact that it's resonating with you is has me over the moon, man.
I mean, so when we did the episode with you guys for Eris, like, that was kind of at the start of, the COVID and everyone kind of in that. And so, like, at that point, we saw a lot of, like, Kickstarters starting up, and you guys are doing it. And, like, now it has literally, like, been, like, every day there's, like, four or five things I'm backing, which at some point is, like, I think initially I was, like, oh, man, like, I gotta, because, again, you're putting money, and a lot of times it's, you know, something might be till February 21 or whatever. But then the more I thought about it and the more I was kind of looking through, like, all the books I'm backing, I was, like, I'm fucking stoked for all these books, and, like, again, they seem like really unique things that I'm not getting anywhere else. I mean, for you guys, again, we're recording this a little before when you're listening, it's out. Like, launching a book amidst, like, kind of this wave of Kickstarter where Keanu is having a book and, like, you know, everyone else in, like, is doing it. I mean, how do you guys approach that as creators, not only kind of then being able to push the book, but, like, how does that for you, both of you have kind of, you know, either been in, like, you know, Aubrey at, like, IDW and stuff like that, like, been in the other side of it, but now kind of seeing this wave of people just, you know, at this point, just taking it into their own hands and putting books out themselves?
Oh, well, for me, it's sort of like an old I mean, I sort of have come up in the self-publishing and independent world, and so I'm always excited about it. You know, you see things like, you know, like Keanu doing his Kickstarter, and at first it seems kind of like, wait a minute, this is my area, you know? But I don't know, that's a thing that's always, that bothered me, you know, when it happens in the indie world. You know, indie comics have their whole own environment almost, with their own shows and stuff, and sometimes it's weird that there's not a lot of crossover, and when somebody does crossover, there's like a weirdness about it. But then I was thinking about it, I was like, I don't care. I was like, if someone was going to buy Keanu's book, they were going to buy it wherever it was. And if they're on Kickstarter looking at comics from anybody, that's good. That's better than it was.
Get them in the ecosystem, man. Get them right, signed up for Kickstarter emails.
Right. Get more people on Kickstarter and they see more projects. And that's great. You know, yeah. I think the only reason it was problematic to me is like, I don't know, if I was a major publishing company, I would probably, you know, put my own money forward to put it out.
Yeah, that's
but you know, whatever.
I'm 100% with Tyrell on all of this, man. My issue with that thing was really just that I think that I've got complicated views on whether publishers should be using Kickstarter at all, because to my mind, what a publisher, the role of a publisher is to provide capital to get a thing made and then to promote that thing. But if you're just going to Kickstarter anyways, you're not really doing that. So I wonder what point a publisher has, right? Which is a great question to be asking in 2020, I think, man. And I think that's one of the things that's really exciting to me about going through Kickstarter for Beef Bros, because, you know, real talk, Beef Bros is a book that publishers, we didn't pitch around to anybody. And a big part of that was because we knew that publishers weren't going to want this thing. The fact of the matter is, and not because it's not great, because obviously it's great, but because if you're doing superheroes in comics, well, you've got Marvel and DC. Right. If you've got a comic book shop, you already dedicate most of your rack space to Marvel and DC superheroes that everybody knows about. You know, outliers like the massive success of Invincible aside, and also may I note that was quite a long time ago. Right. There's not really a lot of room for non-Marvel and DC superheroes, and as a result, most comic book publishers kind of steer away from them. They carve out different niches for themselves. So this was going to be a really difficult thing. To sell to a publisher, which is why we kind of didn't really bother with it. You know, the thing that really excites me about Kickstarter right now, and Kyle, I'm the same as you, man. I've contributed to more Kickstarters over the past 6 months than I have ever, right? And what's really exciting to me about it is the opportunity to sell directly to consumers. Right. And I don't want to get off on like a direct market rant, because everybody's heard the talking points and it's just I don't know. It's just tiresome at this point. But the fact of the matter is, as a creator, when you're doing a comic book through a direct market publisher, you have to sell the publisher on it. Right. Which that's, you know, that's just part of working with the publisher. You have to pitch them on it. But then you not only have to sell it to the end consumer eventually, before you even get an opportunity to sell it to the end consumer, you have to sell it to direct market retailers, because they buy all this stuff non-returnable. So it's like this, it's a difficult thing as a creator, like especially if you're involved in and think about the marketing of these things, it's difficult trying to space this stuff out, because you have to convince people to even stock this thing and spread the word about it months and months and months before it's even actually going to be available for the end consumer to spend any money on it. And being able to go directly to our readership wherever they are, right? And that's another thing too, man. Like I've been working in comics for a real long time, but I also have a lot of fans and people who like my work who've come to it through either, you know, the podcasting and stuff that I've done, or my wrestling graphic novel with Chris Moreno, which, you know, it was from Penguin Random House, right? It wasn't from a traditional comic book publisher. So, you know, the people who want to read this thing, they don't necessarily have a comic book shop within driving distance, you know? And if they did, you know, it might not even carry a book from a whatever publisher would be willing to carry Beef Bros, right? So, like, so being able to get directly to this audience is something I'm really, really stoked about. And I don't worry too much about, you know, I think that we will, of course, approach a point of Kickstarter saturation, but I don't think we're there yet, man. And especially with something like Beef Bros, like I don't think there is anything else like Beef Bros out there. And I would know because I've looked, man. I've looked for the aspirational leftist superhero comic of my dreams because it's something I desperately want to read. So I'm really confident about running the Kickstarter and excited about it, man.
I think, and that's a good point too. I don't think people are aware, and this is again like kind of in generality, but like you said, if you want superheroes, generally there's the big two, and then but I don't think like if you look at Image, I think you know, maybe 80% of those titles are kind of like sci-fi heady based books. Like obviously there's the outliers, but you kind of then look at like Dark Horse, which kind of skews to, you know, the more adult or often like horror based stuff. And then you have Boom, which will like skew towards like, again, kind of like teen, like, or I don't know, even maybe like, but like they all seem to kind of have these niches and they'll put a lot of apples in those baskets. Again, they'll have kind of the outside stuff, but like, so at that point, then you're kind of limited to like where you can go, where you can pick up. Like, so Kickstarter at least has opened up this route where you can kind of find a hub to find those books, because also I think part of the difficulty as like a reader too is, and we've talked about this a bunch, especially kind of when everything started, is like I want to give money to people to buy books, and but I don't want to have to sit on Twitter and like try and find like who's doing like who's Etsy I gotta find, and like, and a lot of times like that's just like difficult. Like I just want to find the cool books, and like I don't want, like why can't people just give me the books I want? So it's like a difficulty as like a reader. Like I just don't want, I don't want like all those, like I love Image,
let me
but
give
like,
you the books you want. Just allow me to give you the books you want.
I just want a personal shopper who sits all day. But like, so like Kickstarter has at least been a good kind of start to kind of like a hub for like everyone to get there. And like, like maybe like again Boom and kind of doing that project, maybe get someone on to Kickstarter and comfortable at least backing a book, because again that's kind of a hurdle a lot of times, right? I think originally is like, what is this, like yeah, what do? I give you money and then you give me a book at some point, like I don't understand it. So at least it gets somebody over that hurdle and like, oh, this is fucking easy, I can just give you money and you give me a book down the road, okay. Like, and most people run it in a sense now too where like it's just literally like, you're giving me the money so I can print the book. Here's the book. It's done. Here we go. Like, it's been
well, it's
a lot
funny
easier.
Because you'll find that even on campaigns that are running slow for whatever reason, you still probably get it quicker and have to do less work than you would trying to get your comic shop to order it.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
It's like you got to know the code from the diamond previews and then go to your shop and ask them. It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. That's not the way anybody shops.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like the direct connection. That's more what I've been doing for a long time, and so that platform made a lot of sense to me when I first got on it. I was like, this is great. Like, they gave me the money to print it and I send it to them.
Yeah.
Perfect. Done.
Another thing that's really fitting for Beef Bros about Kickstarter is you know, thematically, not just thematically, it's a leftist book, right? It's about it's a populist leftist book about empowerment of regular people in the face of oppressive and restrictive structures and institutions, right? At its core, that's what it's... I mean, it's about big, muscly dudes, but it's also about people pushing back against the institutions and hierarchies that weigh heavily on their heads. And, you know, a book like that, an unabashedly leftist book... Neither Tyrell nor I really felt like it would be appropriate handing over rights to this thing to somebody, you know? And, like, this isn't a knock at any specific publisher. It's just the nature of publishing. That's the deal, right? If you're publishing a book somewhere, the deal is they're going to pay to get this thing done with whatever advance or page rate, however it works out. And this is true not just in comics, but also in regular publishing, like traditional publishing. They're going to pay to get the thing made. They're going to foot the bill for printing it, and they're going to distribute it for you. But in exchange, they get to own some of it, right? And contracts vary, right, from industry to industry, from publisher to publisher, from genre to genre, from author to author. But that's always the deal. And that felt wrong for Beef Bros, you know? Like, for a book that's all about regular people pushing back, we didn't really feel like it was appropriate to hand over rights to this thing. And Kickstarter is a way for us to cut out some middlemen and make it purely about people creating art and creating work and getting it in the hands of people who want it.
Yeah. And so we're recording this a little before, but obviously if you're listening to it, it will be out. So I will tell this question in kind of a way. One, so Aubrey, this is your first Kickstarter. I think a clear tier and goal you need to have is some sort of nudie cover. Those work really well on Kickstarter.
Wait, did you say nudie cover?
Yes. they sell so well. I don't know, like, Kickstarter is, again, a great place for people to get their books out there. It's also a great place to get, like, naked girl books.
Hardcore
on there.
Phenomenal.
It is like,
yeah.
It is like the one of the biggest markets on there. But like, what are your guys kind of like goals for like tiers and kind of approaches to that specifically?
Do you want to take this, Tyrell?
Yeah, I mean we're keeping it pretty simple.
So nudie covers.
Yeah, no. You know, maybe I'll do something throughout. I've been told I'm never afraid when I draw my superheroes to make the
genital, like beef bros. That's
the,
like,
genital areas need to look anatomically accurate for me to be on board. But we decided, you know, I found in the past that with my other campaigns, when you keep it fairly simple, that's the best way to start out, and then you have some room to grow if you do get a big following, a lot of a lot of people buying the book is I think that our tier structure is pretty simple. It's like the book, you can get a digital form, you get it, you know, on paper, which is the preferred way to get it. And then we do have a sticker level. I think Aubrey got some of the stickers. They look pretty rad. They don't look pretty rad. They look super rad.
They're holographic. They're really
neat. They're holographic, which is pretty awesome. And then the other thing that's really important, I think, in the spirit of the book, is that a lot of us are doing this sort of, it's a labor of love right now. So the idea is that, you know, if we make our goal, we can finish making the book and still take care of ourselves and our families. And then if we go over our goal, we'll all actually maybe get closer to what a living wage is for doing it. I think that we've all sort of, as our belief in the book, you know, we've sort of taken a, you know, not a lot of, you know, we're not getting paid for it, you know. So in the spirit of the book, it's like, well, if this thing is something that connects with people, the creative team should share some of that benefit. And then we have talked about future plans, you know, things that, you know, we'll get into now, but like if we did go a little bit higher, we could maybe add some things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, anytime you add those things, you know, one of the things that I believe in, and I think maybe I've convinced Aubrey of this, is that, you know, you got to make the actual product the best thing it can be. And whether that be paying your creative team and getting the right creators or printing it on the best paper you can, like, that's the most important thing, because that's what people are there for, is the book. So if you have a book that you've sent, you know, spent no money on printing and it looks like garbage, and then you've got trading cards and you've got holographic stickers and you've got headbands and you've got fanny packs, it's like, that stuff's cool, but the book is what people are there for. So make that as good as you can, is sort of the philosophy.
100%. Man, one of the things that scared me away from Kickstarter in the past is I would do like back of napkin math on things. And I would, you know, cause I would look around and I'd be like, you know, a lot of these successful campaigns, they'll have, you know, as Tyrell was saying, like, I don't know, Tyrell and I talked about doing fanny packs, which is something I really, really want to, I really personally really want a Beef Bros fanny pack. But like, you know, people do pins and stickers and hats and t-shirts and like just all this different merch and like as different reward tiers. And, you know, whenever I worked out the math for that stuff, once you take into account getting that stuff made and shipping it out, you're having to make so much more money just to fund the creation of tchotchkes, right? And like
garbage that people are going to throw away. You know?
I like to say tchotchkes, but yes, garbage people are going to throw away.
I live a Spartan life over here.
But that's the thing, man. And like, we've all contributed to these campaigns where we like get the stuff and like we're like, oh yeah, that's pretty neat, and then we see it again like 3 years later when we're cleaning out a closet. You know, like, we're not in the business yet, at least, of doing Beef Bros merch, like merchandise, like lifestyle wear, right? Like, we're trying to make a Beef Bros comic book,
right. And if people like it and they want more stuff, dude, Absolutely. Next time there'll be a Beef Brothers weightlifting belt or like a tank top or something. You know, that'd be awesome.
But yeah, like we're trying to make a comic book, man, and so we kept the focus on that. And in terms of stretch goals, you know, I feel the kind of the same way. You know, we've all contributed to these things where, like, you know, every stretch goal, it's like some kind of like new nice thing about the printing, or, you know, there's like a ribbon now that you can use to keep your place, or now there's two ribbons, and, you know, like different stuff like that. And whenever that happens, I'm like, I'm always really happy for the creators, but I also kind of wonder, like, what's the point? Like, is that getting more people, like, are more people buying this thing because of this like printing upgrade? And I have to think, no, man. And so that's why, like, I don't know, it wouldn't convince me. And so again, I think it ties in with the nature and the ethos, whatever, man. I write, I don't talk. I'm from the South. I don't know how to pronounce anything. The ethos of the Beef Bros ethos is, you know, it's very much about worker empowerment, right? And so if we're making a bunch more money on this thing, how about the people working on it get paid better, right? And then if we make a ton more money, how about we just get started working on the next one? It's maybe not as flashy as like, oh, you're also going to get the sticker pack and this t-shirt and this other stuff. But I think it keeps the focus on what we're doing here, which is making the most badass, electrifying, psychedelic, eye-searing, aspirational, leftist superhero comic you can possibly imagine, man.
I mean, I'm, you know, this nude cover thing is maybe, I don't know, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, maybe we should walk some of this back. Except this nude cover thing is really working for me.
I'm on the Explore Comics tab right now. There's some good ones. Well, my last year was my oldest, like, first year in school. So he got his first backpack. He's like, what can I put on my backpack? And I was like, well, I got patches. I got fucking stickers. I got so many pins from these Kickstarters. Like, you can have them all because I don't do anything. So he's, like, literally, like, walking around with, like, Blood Brothers and, like, all this, like, shit all over there. It's like, but... And I think too, like, as sometimes, like, I'm trying to back a project and I'm like, what is the tier where I just get the book? I don't know which one. And dude, like, they're always like weird names. I'm like, I just wanted the fucking book.
Every time I back a Kickstarter, I always feel like I have to spend a lot of time looking for just give me the book. Just give me the fucking book. Just send me the printed book, man. And I don't know. Like, I think maybe we might be a little bit different. I don't know. I used to do a Patreon, I did two of them for my podcasts, and I had actually, like, one of the guys who listened to my podcast was somebody who worked in fundraising, like for charities and stuff, and he just unsolicited sent me a bunch of really fantastic advice, and he was like, listen, you know, the general philosophy on this stuff is you want to provide a lot of tiers, because if somebody's giving you $1, you want them to be able to look and say, oh, well, if I just gave them one more dollar, I would also get this. And then if I gave them $5, I would get this. And then $7, I get this. And then, you know, that way you maximize how much you're getting out of each individual person. And I think that is probably a valid – I know for a fact that is a valid strategy. But I also know for a fact that is a shit ton of work. And back when I did my wrestling podcast, there were days when I felt like I wasn't in the business of doing a wrestling podcast. I was in the business of, like, sending out random wrestling tchotchkes to people, which, again, it just, you know, it's not what this is about, man. This is about funding the creation of this specific comic and getting it into people's hands.
You're talking to two guys who have a Patreon. I don't think we've ever we've mentioned it like once ever.
You should plug your Patreon right now, man.
It's too fucking. Hey, you say it's too much work. Like, I just like making this show, and it is like, you know, doing an extra episode a week of like Patreon exclusive. Like, it's like, man, I just want to do this. It's a lot of work, but I don't know. For you guys, what is the goal? I mean, so this first campaign's for the first issue. What's kind of your, like, if it goes well, I mean, I obviously don't want to, like, commit to anything, but, like, what would be the ideal situation for you guys with Beef Bros?
like more issues, I think, right? I mean, there's
100%. Yeah,
it is a self-contained kind of story in a way, but it leaves lots of room, you know, for adventures. I think, like any good superhero comic, you know, the best ones, in my opinion, are the ones who have these sort of, you know, maybe it's only an issue or a few issues where the heroes meet their villain and kind of fight them, and then it kind of wraps up. But there's always, you know, this other lingering threat in the world for them to address. And so I think that we would just be able to keep ramping up more and more of these guys interacting with their community, which I think is a big thing I'd be interested in exploring with it. And then also having them interact with different forms of authority that maybe have been hurting all of us.
Yeah, man. I want to do more. Like, I've written one issue of this thing, and I'm already champing at the bit to write more of them. I would love to keep doing Beef Bros issues as long as Tyrell is willing to draw all this bonkers stuff that I've been writing, man. And you know, whether that takes the form of another Kickstarter, whether we do find some kind of publishing or distribution deal, which I know a lot of people do with Kickstarters, you know, things do really well and publishers are like, oh shit, that's something we should get involved with somehow. Who knows, man? I want to make sure, though, that whatever we do, that it stays true and pure to, again, that Beef Bros, I need to, if I'm going to keep saying Beef Bros ethos, I need to look up how to pronounce that word. But like, I want to stay true to that, that energy and that worldview of, you know, it's a DIY thing and it's an empowering thing. And I desperately want to do more, because I think it is a tone and vibe that I don't see around places, you know, like, I think you're right. You know, Kickstarter is a really great place for kind of willfully weird and gonzo genre comics, which is another great reason why I think Beef Bros is going to fit right in there. But in terms of kind of explicitly political, but in a fun way, in a way that doesn't sacrifice narrative for lectures, you know, I don't think that there's a whole lot of that, truthfully. You know, like, I'm going to do something really arrogant right now. I'm going to compare us to Jack London. the thing I love about Jack London, outside of the fact that it's like these badass wolves and dogs like running around and in like the harsh landscapes, like aside from all that, which rules, Jack London was a socialist writer, man. And if you read any of those books with an eye towards that, it's really, really apparent if you're reading The Call of the Wild or White Fang or The Sea Wolf or any of this stuff, right? But that stuff is layered in such a way that it feels organic to the story. It never feels like someone lecturing you. It never feels like someone is, you know, would really rather be writing an essay. You know, they're first and foremost stories, but they are informed by these ideas and these worldviews. And that allows that work to transcend the kind of, that work can go beyond preaching to the choir, right? There are legions of like very far right-wing conservative people who adore Jack London work without really fully realizing or grappling with the core messaging within these things. And that's something that I don't know, that I aspire to with Beef Bros, certainly, in that, you know, it should work in such a way that somebody could pick this thing up just because it looks deranged and gonzo and beautiful, and then they read through it and they think it's like an awesome superhero story, but it's kind of like planting the seeds of all of these I think like foundational moral principles. Beef Bros, it's like Jack London.
Yeah, I will say, I'm like kind of just at least from the preview, which I think is,
it's exactly like Jack London, right? You agree?
Yeah, it's I was imagining in 5 years from now you guys would make a live action movie where you would have CG dogs, yeah, on the street. But I think to pull off what you guys do just in the preview, like again, to establish an amazing tone, to really again like just exciting and like fun characters, and then also to again kind of have that like message of positivity, and again to sell kind of like this like over top action and visual like tone and language that you guys are able to do just in the preview, like, is like a testament to like why people should go out and back this. Like, I think that's really hard to do.
I think that's what we need right now, honestly.
Yeah,
like we're launching a week before the U.S. presidential election, and that's by design, man. Partially because I know that I need something good and exciting to focus on, so I don't get sucked into the maelstrom of like social media, like angst and histrionics. But also because I know that no matter how the election goes, right, next month or, you know, in a week when you're listening to this, people are going to need Beef Bros. No matter who wins the election, the presidential election, and all of the other elections up and down the ballot, people need Beef Bros. Beef Bros is what people need right now. People need something that's about making a difference in their community. They need something that is about fighting for each other. They need something about working together and being stronger together. They need something that has a view of the future that isn't entirely doom and gloom, that shows a path forward that isn't about pushing people apart and dividing things up, but more about everybody coming together and figuring out a way to help each other. It's an energy that is sorely needed, I think, and will be for the foreseeable future. And I think it's the perfect time for it, man.
Right. Yeah, it will be nice. It will be much better to, I think, refresh the screen on where you're at funding wise than it will be to refresh Twitter that night. Because that night.
That's 100% how we're going to sell this thing. Pay attention to Beef Bros, not everything else going on in the world.
Yeah, because that's going to be filled with a whole lot of... Oh, wait.
There it is. We got that.
Perfect. Yes.
Look at that. It's like we planned it.
Yeah. Before Tim's final question, we had our first reoccurring guest with Tim's question, so I don't know how he's going to handle that. But... again, we're talking a lot of like positivities. Something we will talk about a lot is kind of, as we round it out, like, what are you guys reading right now that you guys are really enjoying?
Tyrell, you go first. I feel like I'm dominating the conversation.
That's okay. I you know, it's funny. My like new stuff has been like, I haven't been buying a lot of monthlies. The only thing I was buying was Protector, aka First Night.
First Night, yeah.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. I think the first trade came out today.
Well, dude, I think First Night is a better name for it too.
I totally agree.
Yeah,
yeah, I totally agree. So that was a super awesome comic. I was reading my buddy Dan's Wonder Woman comic, but those two are both done. So I'm kind of waiting for the next thing to pop up that I'm ready to read. But I did just finish. I bought a book from my friend M.S. Harkness called Rotten. She also had a book come out recently called Desperate Pleasures. She's an amazing creator. I highly recommend checking out Rotten or Desperate Pleasures. It's a sequel to another book she did called Tinderella. So that's really great. And then in the mail the other day. I can't remember. But as I've been drawing action scenes lately, I've been rereading a lot of Tradmore stuff. So I was rereading... you know, all of Luther Strode and that kind of thing. So that's what's been on my shelf lately.
I've been reading right now, earlier today, before we went live, I'm reading this book called The Discovery of France. And it's about, like, it's about cobbling together a nation from all of these kind of disparate communities in France. And so it's about, you know, it goes all the way back to like Roman Gaul, but it really starts in earnest after the revolution and goes up to like the First World War. And so it's a lot of talk about kind of, you know, all the different language. There were like three different language families and then a bunch of different languages within those, and how like France was kind of this like arbitrarily pieced together nation, and how they kind of forged a nation out of it. It's really fascinating. And you know, I started reading it not because I have any kind of abiding interest in France. I have nothing against France, but a friend of mine just said it was really good, and I wanted to read some nonfiction. So I'm reading that, and I have been slowly. Man, something weird about me is when I find something I really like, I read it really slowly because I know that there's only so much of it, and I try and pace it out. So I have a big stack of old Jade Man comics. Do y'all know about those?
Yeah.
Tyrell's laughing. They're bananas. So they're like Hong Kong kung fu comics from like the late 80s into the early 90s. And it's a fascinating story. There's like a really cool thing on comicsjournal.com about it. But they're bananas, man. So like they're from Hong Kong, and so they have that kind of like manhwa influence, right? So they've got like a, like if you're familiar with manga, they've got some of that technique, but they're also very kind of Western comics influence, because it's, again, it's Hong Kong, and they are, it's all like wuxia stuff, and it's just bananas, and they move at like a million miles an hour, and they'll have like 14 panels per page of like people doing all this crazy kung fu stuff, and the way that they depict action is unlike anything that I've seen in either Western comics or in manga, and I find it really inspiring and weird to read something that's paced so differently. Yeah, man, I've been loving it. I'm reading Drunken Fist is the one I've been reading, and I've also got waiting for it's sitting on the couch or on the bookshelf, just calling to me. I have the fifth big hardcover version of Berserk beckoning me.
Classic. Oh yeah, man. I haven't
can't
cracked
wait to get to it. It's another thing. It's another thing. I'm parceling out to myself. Oh, dude, it's the right size to be reading that stuff. It's really rewarding to see that shit so huge.
They're quickly filling up like whole because I have all five and it's already like half a shelf of that. I was like, how far into this series is this? And I was like, it's not even fucking halfway. Like, where? I don't have room. But yeah, I was like reading real books again, which has been weird. I think there's an episode when we talked about Tim, but like, I was like, I don't know how to read a book anymore. Cause like the whole time I'm reading it, I'm like, my eyes are like twitching. Cause like they're trying to like go all over the place. Cause I'm so used to reading comics. But what's it like? The Clown in the Cornfield. It's like some horror book. It's been pretty good. But I found this Lost City of Heracleion. I don't know. It came out from Arkea, so they put out like, I fucking love their books. Like the quality of book. Like this is like the best smelling book. Like, comic. I don't know. It's some like weird. I don't know how to describe this book. It's by Bruce Livingstone and Mike Wilcox, but it's like this, almost this like what's that movie with the horse that drowns in the mud? Oh, Neverending Story. Like these kids. I don't know. It's like spoilers, this weird psychedelic. Jesus. Yeah, but I don't know. Like I just found this comic. It's so good, but it's like really weird. Like kids go on this adventure in this interdimensional submarine. But it's from Arkea. They put out like really nice books. Like we were talking about, like, I love just like really well put together hardcover books. Like, and this is like newsprint, and it's like thick newsprint though, so it smells like an old book.
Cool.
Yeah. Tim, are you reading anything? You know, I don't even think you read comics.
No, I don't like comics actually. I'm currently reading She Could Fly. It's one of the Burger Books imprint. Dark Horse. Christopher Cantwell wrote it, and then Martin Morazzo did the art, and he's a fucking amazing artist, so you could draw anything and I'll be interested.
Tim recommended something to me that I absolutely adore. He recommended it years and years ago. I texted him about it. He recommended it to me years ago, and I was just like, I was like, I don't know. Like, I didn't say this to him, but like my thought process was like, I don't know. I don't really like the foodie thing, and like that, it's just not really my vibe. And it came on like the animated version, like the anime version came on Netflix. It's Food Wars, and
talking about Food Wars,
dude. You need to watch Food Wars, because what Tim didn't tell me, and I feel like he probably didn't tell you either, the whole concept of that show is that the main character, like, he's like a typical like anime, like spiky haired like a shonen anime protagonist, but the thing is he makes food so good that people come.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
That's what it is. Tim, am I wrong? Am I lying? Tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong. Yeah, you texted me and you were like, how dare you not tell me that this is what the story's about.
Why would you bury the lead? That's what this show, this comic and this show is. So now, yeah, I love it. It's my favorite thing to put on late night on the weekends.
Anytime we've mentioned like manga, Tim has brought up it, and you've never once, I don't think, mentioned that.
Food Wars is so good. It took me like 2 or 3 episodes to realize that it's supposed to be weird and funny too, which is like one of my favorite things. Because I was like, "What is this? Is this just really bizarre? Like, what is going on here?" No, it's funny. It's hilarious. It's really, really good, man.
All right. Well, speaking of good, we got Tim's last question. Tim, this better be good.
All right. Well, I've asked Tyrell before, so. But I guess,
ask me again, because I don't recall what I said.
Perfect. I don't either. So, gun to your heads, if you were forced to write one episode of The Big Bang Theory, what would happen?
Oh, shit.
I do remember what I said. I trashed The Big Bang Theory. So, this time I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say I would, if I was given the opportunity to write it, I would actually bring in like Matthew Berry and Rich Fulcher to help write an episode. And I think that it would probably be a better show.
Mine would be really high concept. It would be them reenacting the entirety of God Emperor of Dune. Like one of them, like I don't know any of their names, but like one of them, Sheldon. How about Sheldon is like a really, really big Dune fan, but specifically God Emperor of Dune, which I am too, if I'm being honest. And so they put on like maybe here's what it is. The rest of the guys lose a bet, and the terms of the bet were that they have to act in Sheldon's one-act play recapping the God Emperor of Dune. And for people who don't know, God Emperor of Dune is like maybe hundreds of thousands of years in the future from like earlier Dune novels, where one of the characters has started becoming a sandworm. And so he's just this giant Shai Hulud with a human face in the middle of it. So one of them, I guess the guy who was David on Roseanne, whatever character he plays, he is in like a giant Shai Hulud costume and like not happy about it. And so it's like a very like wah wah. And every time he comes on screen, it's funny because he doesn't want to be doing it. That's good, right?
Yeah,
it would be better. It would be an improvement.
I know. Just from doing this show, like whatever weird algorithm that exists on the internet, I get like recommendations. I don't Google. Like I Google George Lopez all the time because I got to come up with episode titles and stuff. But like even today, I had a like on my phone. It was like a news article recommended me was like, does this character on The Big Bang Theory like really talk with a lisp? And I was like, I'm going to guess no. And I read like a 2-page article that like the very end was like, no, he doesn't. But so it's ruined my search history.
It's ruined your view of The Big Bang Theory. It's exactly. It's counterfeit. It's not even a real lisp.
Very shocked. If anyone wants to, I don't know. Yeah. You guys at this point, we're early. So if you go on Kickstarter and look up Beef Bros,
baby, I'm going to set up there a redirect link. Go to aubreysitterson.com/beefbros. How about that?
That's even better. I was looking up. I think there is someone has Beef Bros, but.
Oh, on Kickstarter?
What? No. I was looking up.
On the Beef Bros.
Yeah, I was Googling.
You were going to steal the domain from us. You're going to squat on it. No, I already checked, man. Somebody else has got it.
Shouldn't it be in .org or something anyway, then?
Yeah, it's a co-op.
Yeah, beefbros.gov. I'm surprised it's not like a sexy guy site. I'd be into that.
I was hoping it was. I'm not gonna look right now.
No, I just check, which again is terrible because I'm so lazy at night. Like I don't even want to turn on my computer, so I just use my work laptop. So I'm like on my work laptop, like Googling Beef Bros. Yeah, the IT guy's gonna be like, what the fuck is up? This guy's looking at tons of Beef Bros. But if they want to find more about you guys, how can they do that?
At T Cannon Comics on Instagram and Twitter, TyrellCannon.com. I've got a sale going almost always, so if you go there, you'll see something cool for sale.
And all your all your Weedtober stuff too, man. I'm gonna assume you're gonna keep that up because you're doing it right now and it's awesome.
I was actually working on it as we were talking, so yeah, I'm gonna keep doing some Weedtober, which is the sequel to Weed Priests. If you guys know that mini comic that I did years ago, if not, you can get it on my website.
There you go. And I'm Aubrey Sitterson on everything. AubreySitterson. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. .com, man. It's everywhere. And then I'm easy to Google. There's not a whole lot of Aubrey Sittersons running around.
Tim, what are you tweeting about?
News
articles.
Yeah, I write over at Comics Pit, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tim Madera.
Right. Yeah, and our show was at pages_panels. I casually mentioned we have a Patreon. You can sign up for it. I might remember to check it. But the most important thing is make sure you go out and back Beef Bros. Or I mean,
the most important thing.
The most important thing, but obviously I was super excited when Tim emailed me this and you guys want to do it, because again, like, everything you do, Aubrey, like, fucking, like, No One Left to Fight is like one of the best things that came out in 2019. Great. Obviously, we had Tyrell on. Eris, like I said, I got it in the mail, and it's fucking beautiful in person. Like, it, it's so good. Like, you guys coming together to do this is really exciting. And just from, like, this six-page preview, I'm super stoked for more. Like, this is, like, if you wrote a comic for me, this would be it. I feel like you guys are doing this for me.
We are. Tim asked us to. Happy birthday.
All right. I mean, yeah. My birthday was in September, so it was perfect.
Yeah, it works out all right. It's a little late, but you
exactly. know. A little late. It's a thought that slide. But, yes. Again, go back it. If you're listening, do it. Again, we do a lot of these Kickstarter ones selfishly because we just want things to get back so we get these fucking comics. And that's all I care about. I just want these books. But thanks so much for coming on, guys.
Dude, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, dude. It's always good to talk to you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
And... that's this episode, and I promised him we will cover George Lopez next time.
One of these days.
I know. I feel bad. He gets really excited every time. We just can't do it. But all right, I will stop.